Welcome to Ambition Theory Women in Construction. This show asks questions that everybody is thinking about but doesn't want to say out loud. It's about tackling complex topics like, why are there so few women in senior leadership positions? What is it going to take to change this? Each episode is a combination of motivation and tactical strategies to get ahead. We get out of our comfort zones and we take action. We learn, grow, and create opportunities. I am your host, Andrea Jansen, a certified executive coach with an MBA, and since 2018, I've coached over 1,000 construction professionals to level up their leadership. Let's get started. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. G. I am so excited that I get to interview you today. Can you introduce yourself and share what you do?
Well, thank you, Andrea. It's such an honor and a privilege to be here today and spend this time with you, just sharing kind of my journey in diversity, equity, and inclusion. So my name is Dr. Giovanna Brassfield, commonly within industry. It's called Dr. G, and I am the CEO and principal consultant with Brassfield & Associates, LLC. And what we do is we provide inclusive strategy for large infrastructure projects and construction, and then also supportive services to employee resource groups. And I do a lot of keynote presentations across the country. So it's been a journey in this space. And my team and I have been really helping clients when it comes to implementing process and procedure and policies or even programs for diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, but really helping them develop sustainable action so that their employees are engaged and retained.
I love it. And it was amazing. I met you at a conference. We were at a networking event and I recognized you from LinkedIn. So I thought that was really cool that we had connected before. I got to connect with you in real life and now we're making this podcast. So thank you so much for saying yes. And I'm curious, what do you love about the construction industry?
Oh man, I mean, there's so many things about our industry that is truly, truly, truly unique. When it comes to my favorite thing, have you seen the movie The Matrix?
Yes.
Okay, there's that one scene where there's all the numbers that come across the screen. And Keanu Reeves' character, he leans in, he's like trying to figure out the numbers and what it all means. And so to me, that's how I perceive construction. You see these amazing numbers, these things flash around on the actual renderings, the BIM models, how they're all just visual concepts. And then all of a sudden you come back and voila, you see things totally different. And there's that light on the end of the path, which is the actual finished product. The bridge, the structure, the hospital, the hotel, that actually changes our communities that we live in and work in. So it's kind of that for me. And it just is so fascinating. But my DEI lens allows me to engage communities that are often overlooked, not included, making sure everyone has an equal voice in the overall end product, which is that beautiful fixture that's going to be left there for hundreds of years.
I love that you bring that lens because I love that you talk about not just the process, but also the end product, like the communities, our lives, how we work, because having that diverse perspective is so important because you said it 100 years, like that's how long some of these things last or longer. And that's a really long time. And if we make a mistake, it's really hard to fix it.
But more so, you think about the communities that are surrounding these projects. How powerful is it to have a father go and build a product, and then from there, his grandchildren get a chance to see what he's worked on and what he's left actually in the community and really the impact that is made. Now that fixture, whether it be a hospital, hotel, military facility, whatever, bridge, it could be a automated people mover, whatever it is, you know, just making the change in the community and having the overall impact that someone's family has touched that to make a difference.
Oh, I love that. I love that angle so much. I can't wait to dive a bit deeper. But before then, I want to talk about your career in construction. So you started in 2014, and I know, but from your LinkedIn profile, you've worked at a couple really big general contractors. Can you talk about what's different now than when you started in 2014?
I will take you back further than that. So okay. I'll take you back to 2004 when I first raised my hand in this space of construction for diversity, equity, and inclusion. So I was finishing up my doctoral studies and I thought I was going to go into education. I was really good at policy research and I looked at alternative measures for high school graduation to help more minority students get out of high school because there was such an impact on this high school exit exam, what was going to happen. And because of that effort, when it came to policy, I got tasked by the Small Business Development Center saying, hey, can you do me a favor and look into DBE certifications to help more minority businesses get certified so they can do business with the state of California? At that time, it was Caltrans had this amazing contract. So I dived in by raising my hand, took that. And from there, like I said, it was that moment where I was like, I really like this. I like changing people's lives by helping them get certified, understand how to do business with, understand how to build capacity, understand the bonding, the insurance policies that are out there, and this being that advocate internally. So I navigated from that contract with the Small Business Development Center into another contract to help Caltrans up in Northern California with the Bay Bridge. And in that same space, it was technical assistance services that I was providing, working with amazing consultants that were educating business firms. And then also I started diving into compliance. From there, coming back, working for URS at the time, now is AECOM, and then navigating from AECOM, URS to Hensel Phelps, and then Flatiron as well. And in Flatiron, I had a chance to serve as their vice president for project diversity and inclusion. And what that meant was helping the projects on the West Coast when it came to compliance, inclusion, working very closely with project teams. And my baby, which was the Los Angeles World Airport's Automated People Mover project, really helping them implement their plan with that joint venture called Lynx, implementing the plan, monitoring compliance, working very closely with the subconsultants that were on the inclusivity team and reporting to the owner, as well as being transparent in our efforts for inclusion to the external stakeholders. And interesting enough, our country was faced with such impact in 2020. And so this is after COVID. So there was the George Floyd, and so many contractors reached out and was like, what's going on? This diversity, equity, inclusion focus. How do we navigate? How do we think about sustainable impact? How do we think about recruitment, retention? And the list goes on and on. And they kept reaching out to me. And I had a chance at that time to pick a path. Either I stayed where I was at with an amazing dynamic company in Flatiron and doing and supporting many different projects on the West Coast, or I was being poached even by another contractor to be their chief diversity officer. That's something that they didn't have. They wanted to create, but you know, as everyone was forming up and trying to create this market, it was trying to figure out what was a fit. Or I could step forward, which was stepping into my own space, mind and heart first, to really being a consultant, helping multiple construction companies and our industry across gambit. And I had a chance in my own desire is to make a large impact and stepping forward and becoming that consultant with Brassfield and Associates LLC and working with dynamic people in my team to really help from, like I said, strategy when it comes to large infrastructure projects or even social impact, and then even employee resource groups revitalizing. So a lot of companies had taken the position to launch these amazing resource groups, or even they were already in the trenches with the resource groups, but they really didn't know how to support their employees when the employees have their core job, and then now they have this new function that requires equally a lot of time and focus and energy to get momentum, get the support, get the buy-in, the resources. So working with teams across the country in that space as well. And even the communications, I have an amazing communications person who helps me with the messaging when it comes to DEI and being very carefully selecting what we're going to do and being intentional behind the wording. So it's been a journey in this space. And I wish, you know, so it's 04, I think that's where I started. And then now here we are, some years and decades later, and we're still at this crazy conversation of really looking into inclusive practices across the country and across industry and actually beyond our industry. I mean, industry to industry, it's critically important.
So as you're telling me this story, would your observation be that kind of like earlier on, it was more like big infrastructure projects where like DE&I was on their agendas, but like, as you're telling the story, I'm like, okay, it's kind of shifted to become like, now this is something that everybody wants to be a part of. Everybody wants to start implementing these programs. Is that kind of what's different?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because yeah, you're spot on, Andrea. When it came to initial conversations, it was project driven. So the projects were initiating this by the owner's request. And it was led by those RFP responses. What are you going to do to really have a social impact, charitable contribution, utilize small and diverse business, give us a plan. In your plan, it gets graded and rated. And then from there, you potentially, it adds to the total scoring of the overall proposal, which can be your differentiator if you get the project or not. And I think about the Los Angeles World Airport's Automated People Mover project. The actual inclusion section was higher rated than the past experience section, which is mind-blowing for a project of such capacity to come in and being. It was, to me, when I saw the plan, I was like, whoa, I have to implement this. There were so many different facets of inclusion, from the local stakeholders to capacity building to developing an educational program for those coming out of reentry, for foster youth, for youth engagement from the middle school, high school, continuation level. There were scholarships that you have to award. There was internships you have to award. There was, I mean, just the list went on and on for this particular model of inclusion. And so you're seeing that, but now the flip is more organizations are looking at DEI for recruitment, for retention, for promotion, because employees are speaking out about what does your organization look like? When you have pictures on your website, do they really speak to inclusion? Do your marketing material, does it speak to inclusion? Does your even policies and benefit package? And that was one of the ones recently I felt it was for an LGBTQ plus individual to prove, you know, they were with this partner for X amount of years, there was adversity that they faced in that whole experience. And then it was very traumatic for that individual. So you're seeing more companies take a position on supporting LGBTQ plus, which is so needed. And then also more minority support, and especially our women in industry. But we're still, the interesting part about our women in industry, we've been having this fight for decades upon decades upon decades. And we're still at a staggering 10 to 13% of industry. So why haven't we just got to 15 or to 20 when there's such intention, there's such organizations that are advocating for the policies, the engagements, the education for women, such as NAWIC, WCOE, you know, YOPS. There's organizations galore in this space.
Okay, what's the issue?
The issue is allyship. You know, I think it's been talked about in so many different ways and fashions. But it's allyship, because far too often the organizations will isolate and be like, this is a, for example, we went to NAWIC. That's where we had a chance to connect. Go to NAWIC. We looked at a sea of people that were there. All these attendees, almost 1,000, anywhere from 800 to 1,000 people were at that conference. We could count 20 men, right? So why didn't we have more men in the audience? And it was just, to me, it's a changing our perspective and changing our lens to be more inclusive and say, hey, we need you to understand our position. We need you to be in those rooms that obviously the men are in that oftentimes we don't know about, or we may be in the room and they give us a secretarial pad. You know, so these kind of conversations, we need more men to advocate for us, to help us elevate for all.
Okay, I love that you brought that up, because I knew there was something about you when I saw you at that cocktail hour. I'm like, I need to talk to Dr. G about this, because we are 100% on the same page. And we're noticing that, like, we're getting invited into room. Like, I'm getting invited to speak in places where it's like not a women's conference. It's like just a construction conference. And let's be honest, like, most of the attendees are men. And I'm talking about sponsorship of women. And so I think the exciting time of right now is, like, I think the organizations that have been doing this work for like decades, it's really been putting, you know, the burden has been on women's shoulders. And I think what's exciting for me now is that as a society, we're realizing, okay, like, women cannot solve this on their own, right? Now I think the industry is actually kind of catching on to that, and it's just beginning. So that's what I feel really excited about that. But I love that you brought that up, because we're never going to make change without that allyship, without everybody kind of taking that step forward.
Right. It has to be all. It has to mean whatever the issue, whether it's minorities, whether it's LGBTQ plus IA, or if it's women, that same, or even youth, you know, think about the new people coming into industry, even that advocacy there for support in transition to industry. It has to be all like allies in supporting one another and our differences that make us quite unique from one another. But having that voice and that strength to stand up and say, you know what? There should be women here, and that should be a man to say it, right? Because they're with their, you know, good old boys, right? We still have that, unfortunately, but there's also some amazing women in our industry. So having, rather than them, you expect it from the women to say, we need more women. Why not having a couple of the men in the group, having them say, hey, you know, it'd be kind of cool to have Sarah, having Melissa, having, you know, whoever come into the room.
I love it. Okay. I want to take this back to this, something else you said before. It's really about this shift of DE&I being more about retention, engagement of employees, because that is something that we, every construction conference I've been to in the past year has talked about the talent shortage and retention, right? And people are just getting an extra $20,000 and they're going over there, and I just can't keep people and I can't offer more money. Like, there's no more money in the budget. So I want to talk about that money being the motivator in the industry, because the industry does pay well. You can have a very lucrative career in construction, but why is it not working anymore?
Wow. I think the DEI perspective, there was a study done by McKinsey and Company called Diversity Wins and How Inclusion Matters. And we found out of that, the top 25% of racial and ethnic diverse companies are 35% more financially sound. So if you think about that, they're investing more, they're thinking about diversity and inclusion, they're financially better off, and they're able to reinvest that money back into the organization to make sure they sustain and retain employees by that growth. They're also, the organizations that attract women are 25% more likely to be profitable on average. So there's these initiatives that are showing why diversity wins. Why does it matter?
And then what does it mean from like an individual perspective? Like, I'm working, right? Like, I could work at this company or I could work at that company. What does it make a difference from that? Can you talk about that perspective of it?
You're talking about perspective of,
like, what's in it for an individual of having a workplace that invests in diversity, equity, and inclusion?
It looks like conversations. It looks like supporting maybe your work-life integration. I won't say balance because that doesn't happen, right? Because you have to integrate everything into one another. It looks like really education when it comes to when you say you want to advance, helping develop that roadmap to advancement. And then also the benefit structure. What does that look like for those who are different coming in, or even the parental leaves when it comes to supporting our male counterparts or even our women, how long in the support? Or even now, the big conversation has been remote hybrid model. And the harder part for our industry is because teams, you know, working together and dynamics, we're building stuff. And how do we create equity when we have our field versus our office, right? The field wants that same benefits where they can have the flexibility. They're not allowed to, right? Because we have different barriers and boundaries and policies and politics that play a role into that. And also the need, right? We need to have our crews working on a certain thing at a certain time to finish up that so the next crew can come in to build out. But the office has that flexibility to choose, right? So then there goes a conversation on what's equitable, what's fair in that whole conversation.
Yeah. So, okay. I love that you brought up the site versus the office people, because this has always been like a divide. Yeah. And as I've kind of like been growing in machine theory, learning more about the industry, kind of like the narrative that I hear is that it's separate. We have to treat everybody separate. So is that the way, or is there a way for us to bring people together? I'm so curious.
Ooh, this is such a good and a hot topic at the same time. So good topic, because it's constantly being discussed and so many different organizations all across industry. So the hard part, which somebody told me from the field, he's a general superintendent, love him dearly. His name is Big John. He's very close to this organization called Second Call. And he's one of my huge, huge mentors. So he told me, he was like, it's a difference. The stuff y'all do, and I'm just giving it, y'all do in the office, is totally different from what we do in the field, right? And he's like, the people usually developing the policies and practices are those in the office, and how it rolls down to the field might be totally disconnected. So now we're seeing more groups, like I'm super excited. I have a chance to serve on the Associated General Contractors of California. So AGC California, I serve on their Construction Education Foundation board. But in that board, from that, I also serve as their Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Steering Committee chairperson. And in that committee, we have a chance to make sure we're engaging the field. We have an amazing superintendent on that committee, because again, the perspectives are different and we're trying to make sure we're all inclusive, creating equity, creating fair conversations, because some stuff that we might create because of not knowing, not being there day to day, or having the understanding of how the foreman, the superintendents, the actual general, all this stuff happens on the field. Those conversations have to be included in our planning to be very all engaging for everyone when we think about the dynamics and the recommendations. I remember, for example, I'll share one of the things that kind of hit me hard, which was when we had COVID and everyone, we were deemed emergency employees at that time to finish our work and make sure we're moving construction forward. When the streets, we had a curfew, and we had to get in early. Do you remember that time?
Yes, I remember.
We had a curfew. So this one employee comes into my office and I say, okay, we created this amazing, this is the office thing. We created this amazing pass that when you get pulled over, should you get pulled over because we're deemed emergency classification, you're going to pull out this card and you're going to show the police officer that you're going from the job site to home or to home to the job site. And he stops and he looks at me and I'm like, what's going on? You know, he has this look on his face of confusion. And I'm looking at him like, okay, he wants to say something. So I'm trying to create a safe space at the same time as I'm looking at his face, watching the dialogue, you know, the body language. And then he says, I said, can I ask, help me understand a little bit more about this pass. And I took it away from him. I had to decenter it really fast to help me understand about this pass. You know, what do you think about it? And then so he's like, well, Dr. G, I'm a man, a Black man. I can't reach over and pull out a pass. And I said, oh, he said, regardless if I'm in construction in the field or not, I can't reach over and pull out this pass. We have a heightened awareness of diversity and inclusion. And I was like, total oversight, blind spot for me. Because I didn't have, and I guess in my conversations, didn't have anyone, male, African-American in my conversation. Huge oversight. Didn't think about that one perspective. So we had to take that information back. And again, we changed who was in the room with our conversations to be more inclusive of that conversation, field, office, diverse groups, and we were able to dive deeper into the conversation about impact because that was something so critical that we missed. And it wasn't intentional. It was just not knowing and not aware. So there's more of these conversations happening, field, office, I mean, diverse groups, getting together to brainstorm and group think about how to improve our overall industry when it comes to lean practices, when it comes to more inclusive, when it comes to RFP responding, what does it look like for the response for strategy? Charitable groups, or if your proposal has to be more inclusive of translation for the different groups that are in the community that you're trying to attract to do your project. Like all these things are now, I mean, you're seeing more common.
I want to go back to this conversation that you had about the pass, because what did you do? Because I think like for you, I think it's second nature to create that safe space where people feel free to share their voice and share their perspective. But can you like unpack that a little bit? Like, and how could somebody else, like in a situation like that, really get to the root of the problem? Because it sounds like you did it. And as you're telling me the story, it's like, it sounds like it was very smooth, but it's not always smooth for everybody. No. Like they don't practice that. So can you just unpack that a bit for me? Because I think that's a really good insight to pull out those opinions. And I don't think we, as humans, like we don't naturally have that skill yet.
Right. I think it's more so that tapping into the emotional intelligence, you know, when you're seeing someone's change in body language or their facial expressions change, trying to figure out a safe way to keep the energy consistent, keep your face and your body language, you know, more grounded. And then my mentor has told me, she's absolutely amazing. She's like, help me understand, right? So they're helping you understand if there's an issue or problem. So help me understand whatever it is. And then that creates a safe space. Or even if you want to move an agenda forward, I learned this from Chris Voss and his negotiation skills. I love Chris Voss. He talks about, is this fair to say, right? When you're trying to make a movement on a practice or policy, is this fair to say? And the other person will say yes or no. Usually they say, yeah, that's fair because it, you know, the other cost is to be not fair. But I try to make it so it's warm and welcoming for both myself and them. But I want to learn. The goal is to learn so that, again, you're elevating that allyship, because I don't know everything from a different diverse group or their perspective, things that they've faced, maybe the hardship, the adversity, but the listening ear is so critically important when it comes to just conversations in order to learn and listen. I think about when I was corporate working with Flatiron, the president at the time, John DiCiccio, he had a chance to really go on a listening tour. That was his priority, is to go on a listening tour, pulling in employees all over the country in the company to listen to them, hear their perspective on diversity and inclusion. We had some that were for, some that were against, but again, was still learning and listening to those perspectives so that from him, his role as a leader, CEO at the time, he was gathering information needed so he can make inclusive decisions or even look at his KPIs, look at the strategies that were planned for us ahead, and how can we be more inclusive as an organization? What does it look like for retention practices, sustaining projects, or even meeting client needs? But it's by making sure that you're hearing your employees so that you can know how to navigate or what programs need to come out.
Oh, I love that. And question on that one, what did you do to like prep the participants? Because like you said, some people gave not the best feedback at those sessions. So what did you do to prepare those sessions so that the employees actually felt comfortable telling the truth to the CEO? Because that, right? You're like, the CEO, I need to be on my best behavior. I should watch my voice. Like, really, that's kind of like what, you know, the narrative that we tell ourselves. Right. So how did you overcome that?
There was no prep, surprisingly. We identified who would be in the meeting beforehand at all levels of the organization, from field to middle manager to senior, and then to those coming in. We even had a couple of interns. But we also had someone from HR in the conversation. We had corporate communications who was jotting down the notes. But we started with a framing. We're framing this because we want to be better. We want to know the truth and your honesty, right? And then the HR person will be there to say, if there was a specific issue, we are here to address your specific issue separate. So he would be a referral. Like if there was a bullying or whatever the issue would come up, that person will be referred to HR. They would have a one-on-one offline, one-on-one conversation. But this one, again, was to get information so that we could improve as an organization. So if there was policies that really we didn't know that could be strengthened because of where we are as a country now, if there was programs we could really look to, maybe partnerships, collaborations, what we were doing internally, what did they like about the organization? What made them stay? You know, some of people have just started. Some people have been there for a while. Why are they still here? Those deeper questions, but it was free flowing. So he didn't have any questions. We started with one question at the beginning, and then he listened. We were collecting information time and time again during that. And then we took it back to, we had a diversity and in DIGS, diversity, inclusion, growth group internally within the organization, all of which was based on the KPIs, but each focus was diverse in its entirety. So each of the pillars was diverse. And then from there, the groups would take the information and notes that were gathered during those listening tours and then divvy it up as far as giving it back to the executives, like strategizing, what were the key areas, how to rank them, where they were going to start looking at first, and then give it back to the executive committee for their overall planning at their strategic leadership for the year.
I love it. I love this so much because it's integrated into everything. It's not like D&I is a set, always the listening tour happens and then now we're doing our strategic planning, but it's separate. I love that it feeds in and it's like part of the KPIs. It's like part of how the business is.
That is, it really has to be, but it has to be because far too often, you know, you've been there before where the organizations will do these amazing, you know, pulling the information, the questions, the surveys and the things all around. And then you're like, well, what happened to that? What happened to that information? Was there any changes coming out of that? Or was there any reporting back to the organization or the employees? And so that was one of his intentions, is to make sure that that information was shared back internally and that the employees who are working within the organization would see momentum and movement and not just be one group included, but all groups. Because again, around the whole country and the company, he was looking for information.
I love it. Okay, so I have a question about employee resource groups, because you said you help companies with those. So one thing that we've noticed, like we kind of know many women's employee resource groups, but what happens, what my observation's been is like a company starts an employee resource group and then the women in the employee resource group, they're learning all these things. They're bringing in speakers, they're educating themselves, they're doing all this amazing work. They're supporting the women that they work with. But time and time again, I've seen these leaders get burnt out because they're learning all these things, they're engaged in all these things, but they don't necessarily have a line to the senior leadership team and change doesn't actually get implemented. So then they end up burning out. And in some cases, like I've seen people like completely leave the company because it's just so much extra work. So tell me the better way to manage employee resource groups.
Well, group share. One is the best way is group share. So the hard part is because the employees come in, they're like, I'm an engineer. And now I volunteered because I wanted to get more visibility with leadership. And I took on this chair role or vice chair of this employee resource group. And now I'm doing all these amazing things, plus this, and I now don't have enough time. So the goal is to bring the whole committee in and look at allyship as one, because you need to have your men in the conversation. You have to have the males involved in the conversation. You have to have those who are different involved in the conversation. You have to have diverse groups involved in the conversation to get a different outcome, because the goal is to grow and learn and really advance in space. And then also thinking about communication across, because that's, I found that some of the organizations didn't have a internal communication pool from the East Coast to the West Coast for the women's groups, and even having a toolkit available. So creating a toolkit, some common basics. And then from there, you need to have your champion. Your corporate champion has to be involved and engaged in your group. And that person's responsibility is to go back to their peers of executive status and sharing the progress, the movement, the successes, and the ask. I call it the ask, right? Because you're asking those other senior executives to come and be involved, to also be the champion, be the cheerleader in their region or their district, to make sure that they're elevating the conversation, because people are going to want to be involved when you see the leadership equally as concerned about why this has to happen. And they're leaning in for more change as far as the organization and what they can do. And then also your recruitment team, what are they doing to make sure they're advancing? So you have your women's support group having the employee recruitment group focusing equally on women out there in industry, how to really tap into groups on campus, groups, you know, maybe young professionals, maybe there's a build workshop like NAWIC has, you know, making sure we evolve, but that build workshop can have men involved too. It doesn't preclude men from being involved. So you're changing the perspective and the visual, like, yeah, this is a group for elevation of women, but it doesn't have to be only women. We need all involved.
The theme that I'm getting as you're telling me this is like, it needs to be part of this overarching strategy, and there needs to be a line to the top, and they need to take it seriously and take action. I think that's as you're talking, everything you're saying, like, I think that's the key takeaway for me.
Yep. You do. And you need people. So that's another big thing. You need people to make all this come to fruition. It can't be, I remember having this one event at one company, and they were like, Dr. G, this is your event. And I said, it can't be my event. It cannot be my event. This is a too massive event for one. This is too important for us as an organization to do this event. And it has to be something we all care about. And they were like, okay, perspective change, right? And then I said, I need you all to focus on this event as successful. And they did. They did. And then you saw everyone getting excited about it. Everyone wanted to be involved. And I would report kind of the progress, the updates, the fundraising goal. It made it more like, rather than an individual. So for example, if one individual leaves the organization, will this effort continue on? And it has to, right? If everyone's supporting and you got the buy-in and those resources, you're great. And then next is talking to those executive leaders about financing. What does this look like for financing? There's amazing ENR, there's NAWIC conference. The list goes on and on for different things. There's CIEF, Women's Conference in Sacramento coming up in October. There's all these things, but are we supporting our women employees or male employees, if they want to learn, to go to these events and making it okay if the men want to go too? That's the whole thing. Because I remember, you know, some organizations are like, oh, that's for the administration, Dr. G. And I'm like, well, why can't I go? I don't understand. So it could be helpful for me in understanding core functions day to day at the job site, administration. They run the job. Why would I not want to go?
Yeah, I think it's like taking people out of that kind of box that we put them in, because that's, I think that perspective, that's where you get that sharing of perspective. So thank you so much for sharing that, because like, as you're describing it, it sounds so simple, but we always know it's really hard. It's always hard to implement. So I want to talk about like the implementation of things, specifically around retention. Because I know when we met at the conference, you were talking about the great resignation, right? Like, people are just leaving and using this as a way to retain employees and attract employees so that they want to stay with you for the long term. So tell me about the implementation piece, because it sounds all amazing, right? It's like, why doesn't everybody do this? Right. Because it's not easy.
And I think it's not. And I think, you know, just to dive into the great resignation, refers to like a nominal phenomena that started, you know, really, really impacting every industry right after COVID-19 pandemic. And so we saw in 2021 that people were choosing, like, at that time they were faced with life, like really choosing what makes them happy, changing their perspective of where they wanted to spend their time, changing their perspective of how long they would be here. They were really faced with these other things of focus and really leaving the workforce altogether. And we saw huge, huge impacts in construction, which, as you know, we were already at a workforce shortage. For decades, we've been talking about this workforce shortage. We need people to build these amazing, iconic infrastructure projects or projects that we're building across country. And a few contributing factors to the overall great resignation were COVID-19, remote work made it easier for employees to quit jobs or even find a job or double up on jobs. And then we found that people were looking for more meaningful work, really finding that one life passion that they've always wanted to do, but they didn't have a chance to. And now they were looking for those, reevaluating their priorities and then seeking meaningful, fulfilling jobs. We also saw pay and benefits were something that became more of a priority, where there was a desire for better pay, better benefits, and then employers had to truly adjust and try to pivot quickly. And then the last thing I think that we had saw during that time was balance. You know, employees look for companies and roles that prioritize work-life balance, or like I talked about earlier, work-life integration, and really helping that. Because I think about, even for me, I mean, when I was, working corporate, I didn't leave because of the great resignation. I left because there was a huge ask and demand of diversity, equity, inclusion. But in that whole thought process, if I had to think about balance and pay and all this other stuff, but I think my balance was, I was working long hours as an exec, you know, from early in the morning, going to the gym to work out, just so I have wellness. And we talk about mental health, that's a whole nother conversation. But that was my thing, my gym experience. And then I would get to the office about 7 a.m, go talk to people in the field, hear about what's going on at the job site, and then start my day. I would stay there until about 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock. Then I would dive into the numbers, project success, or if I had an evening event, reception, activity, dinner. I mean, I didn't get home until 8:30. And my son knew, again, I would try to integrate. My son knew every night when I got home, we would do a night walk every night. We would walk around our community. He would get a chance. I would leave my phone. I would be mommy, put on my tennis shoes, my sweatpants, and my hoodie, and just walk around the neighborhood and really get a chance to talk to him about his life and what he's doing and what's going on. But it was trying to find that balance, that integration of how to make it all work and these different hats that we wear as professionals.
Okay, so how do companies do this? So there's a lot going on, and how can we make it better? Because I think when you talk about people finding meaning at work, like, that's a beautiful thing. And I think like that people are kind of connecting with their emotions, connecting with what they want, is actually a good thing for society, but kind of like the structures currently that we have in place in businesses don't necessarily jive. So how do we go about like making that shift, like from a company perspective?
I think there's so many different factors when it comes to like programs that organizations can implement to really attract and retain talent. There's now, like never before, there's a war on talent, where it's manifesting in companies to secure experienced project managers, tradespeople, engineers, and really making sure that they minimize the impact due to the workforce shortage. But it's more so creating this additional risk for delay because the talents, people are moving around more. Also, project delays, it's no longer due to materials. You know, we're thinking about workforce to build out these amazing projects. I think there was a project in Kansas City by the DOT that was not able to finish, not because of the impact to deliveries, the project schedule, but it was because they didn't have enough people to actually finish the job out. So now we're trying to make sure as an industry, we don't have this across more areas. And then the last thing, I would think about the increased costs. You know, we think about from the Great Resignation, there's a huge, huge increase in costs, especially when it comes to materials. So trying to make sure that organizations are more intentional when it comes to workforce, so that we're really combating the war on talent, project delays, and increased costs by keeping the talent that we have and growing them internally, but providing an atmosphere and ambiance so that everyone can feel included, part of. And we're seeing that, I think that the younger generations, they're hopping more. And initially, I think when it was coming up, that was a bad thing. You can't hop jobs. You got to stay there for a long time and you can't leave in your resume. But now it's welcomed. They want to see if you're not inclusive, you're not really doing practices or promotions or giving them a roadmap to get to their next position. They're leaving and it's okay, which is odd and scary, which is exciting. At the same time, I don't know how to, you know, even do that. It's like, ugh.
And so I'm going to go back to kind of like taking action. So I've been learning so much from this interview. So I feel like from a company perspective, like, is it as simple as like listening, being curious, like doing kind of like your own listening tour in whatever capacity you can? to kind of get started on kind of understanding like what makes your employees, what makes them want to stay? Right. Is that kind of the approach?
Yes, because you can't, I mean, the funny thing is diversity, equity, and inclusion has been around for a long time. So many people have asked me like, oh, Dr. G, this has started. And I'm like, no, this has started in civil rights. Like back in the day, there's policies, programs, there's theory, there's methodology. There's a lot of research that RAND, I serve on RAND's Center to Advance Racial Equity Policy Board and their steering committee chair. And in that space, we're looking at a lot of research that has started as of recently, but it's been these policies and practices have been around for a long, long time. And organizations are having to really dive into this space and not just performative DEI, which is that check mark we hear common that happens, unfortunately, but actually thinking about long-term visionary strategy. There was a study by Pricewaterhouse in 2023, January, that says 40% of companies now have paused their DEIB initiatives, which is scary because of either just life, I mean, change, pivoting and policy, and you're seeing just such a pushback now on policy. And then there was another study by Deloitte in March of this year that talks about employees, 70% of employees are likely to leave if there's no DEIB, while 70% people in that survey said they would leave if their organization did not have DEIB program and they didn't take it seriously. That's scary. I mean, that's shocking and scary all at the same time.
Okay, so I want to like shift the conversation to action because it's, and I want to talk about small company, big company, someone in the middle of a big company. So someone that doesn't necessarily have a big budget or a ton of influence over the industry, what can they do? Because these are great principles and you can implement them on your team, right? Like maybe your company's paused. Right. Like we said, you said so many companies have paused their DEIB initiatives. Like maybe someone's working in a company like that, but they're like, you know what? Yeah. I want to do something. What can they do if you're like kind of in the middle of a company to just want it, making your team more inclusive? What is
Yeah, I think that's a great, great question. And then also to, I mean, I guess partner with the last question you asked me is starting, well, just starting where you're at, meeting people, meeting organizations where they're at. Each company that I've had a chance to work with is at a so different point in the journey. And so I remember having this one conversation with a client and they're like, just use that presentation that you use with another company and we'll start there and we'll do this. And I'm like, that'll be great. But that company that you're referring to is 10 years into their employee resource group training program. They're celebrating 10 years. You're just launching your inclusive council this year. So the strategies and the conversations that we would coach them on is totally night and day experience. So I would say start with a listening tour to understand what are the concerns, what are the issues, what are the successes, the things that you're doing well. Dive on all aspects. You know, the good thing about these conversations is you want to know what you're doing well so you can keep doing that, what you can improve on, right? So you can improve. And then maybe looking far out, like people had a magical wand. I always love asking that question. If you had a magical wand, what does it look like? If you could do anything, what would it do for your organization? And then they dive into that question. And I usually give them breakout sessions so they can think in small groups and come back and report out. And then the group as a whole will take the form of answering and think about perspective and diving into those questions. But it's that listening session that's number one. And then any survey data, every company wants to do a employee retention type of program survey. And they're looking at employees from the retention perspective or the HR umbrella. They do a collection of information on an annual basis of what's done. That information is critically important. And then even looking at the numbers, you know, where people are at when they come in, how long does it take them to get to the next level? Are they promoting? How many people of diverse backgrounds or differences do you have at other levels? Do people, when they are applying, and this is all the qualitative and the quantitative parts of the overall assessment, is understanding the feelings, you know, and then also the numbers. Because if it's not measured, it's not a priority, right?
I love it. Okay. So would you say, because we always end the podcast with a 24-hour action. So would you say a great, I think my 24-hour action is going to be the listening tour. Like, I love that idea because you could make it big or you can make it small. Right. You could listen to one person and I feel like you could learn something. So would you recommend that as an action for people?
I think that's an easy start. It doesn't cost anything besides time. Obviously, people are hourly. Nonetheless, but it's nominal when it comes to just listening to people and understanding perspective. And I have one good example on that. I had to implement a program for reentry population. it was a place where I'm like, okay, what do I do? And I like to say, hey, I'm going to go to this meeting. I'm going to learn about reentry community coming into construction. Our industry is the most forgiving industry ever for career launch. So I went to the meetings. I heard the concerns. I listened. I engage in the actual conversations. So again, it's a lot of unlearning what you've learned, right? So you're not walking in with fear or emotion. You're like, okay, I'm here with intention to learn, open mind, and engage and ask questions afterwards, obviously, because you're listening first, right? The questions come afterwards when you can write down or think about your questions and really dive further into the dialogue, because now you're building. But at first, you need to have a foundation of a structure, right? We think about our structures. You need to have a strong foundation before you put the piles in, before you put the beams up and the retaining walls, all that fun stuff. That has to happen by listening and understanding.
I love it.
So that's the action. That's the action. Listen, and without trying to come back with a response, without saying, this is my belief, just listen.
Just listen. Okay, I love it. I love it. It's so simple, but so hard to do, to just listen.
Right.
The practice. So Dr. G, thank you so much for doing this interview. I learned so much from you today. How do people connect with you?
I'm on LinkedIn all the time and I respond to my message. So that's Dr. Giovanna Brasfield, but it's Dr. GIOVANNABRASFIELD.com. Or you can Google Brasfield and Associates. I'm Googleable as well too. And then also you can always reach out to Andrea. Andrea will hook me up with you. I'm glad to stay connected with you via that as well too.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.